is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network's Loving the Earth Environmental Revolution. Joining us this morning in New York and this afternoon in Geneva is Michael Stanley Jones. Good afternoon, Michael.
Hello. Good afternoon, Don. Good morning.
Well, this is cool. So now tell me, how did you become, we've talked before, so I want to walk that path. How did you become the very important member of the UN Safe Planet campaign that you are?
That's a story that goes back to work I had done on protecting rivers in Central Europe and later in California. I'm from San Francisco region and spent half of my professional life working with community organizations and the other half working with governments, in particular the governments of Central and Eastern Europe after the demise of the communist bloc. And with these organizations, I had helped bring together hundreds of community groups and coalitions to work on treaties that protect water quality and the riparian forests, protect the Danube Basin and later California rivers and water quality, including the San Francisco estuary. This work got the attention of the United Nations, and I was invited first just to present work on environmental justice and toxics issues to a UN conference, and later was invited to join the Secretariat of the United Nations here in Geneva. I currently work as the focal point, as the public information officer for the UN Safe Planet campaign, which is a UNEP, a United Nations Environment Program, and Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN FAO-led program, global program, to promote information and solutions to the chemicals and waste issues that face the globe.
Well, so well and succinctly all put together for us. I can tell that you have a lot of practice in doing this, and I think that makes sense, you being a public information officer and a focal point. You must get contact from, what is it like, just to get started here, we want to get to know you a little better. What is a day like, when you have the whole world coming to you about chemical safety, health effects, these various treaties? Can you, in a few moments here, and it doesn't have to be a few moments, maybe even more than a few moments, just kind of give us an idea of what a day in your life at this stage of your life is like?
It's like no other day at any other stage. We're entering a new era on working on these issues of toxics in the UN system. I used to have jobs like other people. I taught school. I taught English. I worked in the business community and in the IT sector in California and Silicon Valley, and I worked with community organizations where I got up and took the train to work and put in a 9-hour day, and then came home. And it's not like that now. We're very excited that the issues of hazardous chemicals and waste and the health impacts of the chemical society, as one of our supporters, Stefan Jarl, puts it, has surfaced in a new way within the governments that we serve and within the grassroots organizations around the globe. The wave of activity has just overwhelmed the capacities that were set up some years ago to deal with these issues. And now the UN, FAO and UNEP leading the way, in partnership with WHO, the World Health Organization, and other secretariats of the UN, is taking a fresh look at how to galvanize the energy that is clearly out there to deal with toxic chemicals issues. So my day now starts when my eyes open, I'm jumping out of bed. I have to log on because I'm communicating using IT with groups and individuals all around the globe, make the first cup of coffee, and already am in touch with initiatives and individuals to push things forward. I come into the office. I live in a village outside of Geneva. I don't live in the city, but I come in each day. And it's a very, very long day, but it's a very gratifying set of people and activities we're working with. Try to get home before 9 p.m. and try to get off of the communication circuit before midnight. But it's full time in a way that's 7 days a week. And it's been this way for a little over a year since the Safe Planet campaign was launched. The demand, the call for this is so strong that we hardly have time to take pause and take stock. We just need to act on this tidal wave of energy that's come to us from the communities and from governments that want to get serious about this issue.
That is so cool. You know, has anybody ever asked you that question before? You seem just so quick and capable of, you know, putting together an answer like that. You're very
well.
Good.
The odd thing is, Don, I'm not actually as a public information officer. It's not normal actually to go out and speak very much and very loudly. The UN is a shy organization. We work quietly and help provide information, but we're my dual role as a press officer. Even in that capacity, I'm not regularly giving interviews or going out and speaking on the stump, as Americans might say. I did some of that work before in other capacities in
okay.
California as a community organizer, but this is a very unusual role, and it's a very unusual campaign. It's not business as usual at the UN.
You have to say it's unusual in the aspects to which I have a connection to it. Also, I did not come into contact with you by this like straight line. Kind of, you know, say I decided I was going to figure out what top work was being done on hazardous chemicals and health effects. That wasn't the way it occurred at all. I came to, you know, you actually contacted me, and that transpired because I had been seeking to have an on-the-record interview with a UNEP scientist, a WHO scientist, a U.S. FDA scientist, a U.S. EPA scientist, a U.S. CDC scientist, and a U.S. NCI scientist, this National Cancer Institute. I've been seeking these interviews on the subject, at first on the subject of dioxin exposure cancer, quantitative cancer risk assessment, and then I began seeking them this broader brushstroke of the quantitative cancer risk assessment for POPs, collectively, and you are the first person that, you know, I finally kind of connected with to the extent that we're talking now. Thus far, none of those other entities, there hasn't been anyone in any of the other entities that has been willing to discuss this. And it's so cool. This afternoon, a few hours from now, this Dr. Vincent Caliano, who was formerly the head of the Monographs Program for the IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, which is part of the WHO. I did an interview with him about quantitative cancer risk assessment with regards to dioxin exposure back when he was working for IARC, and now he's working for US EPA. And so I contacted him, and this went so smoothly. There's a different vibe between, there's a certain part of our human race, you know, a certain tribe of people that it just is working. It's kind of like building, like you say, this new way of responding, this great energy for dealing with the chemical society. And this, we see it as an environmental revolution. You know, I love revolutions. And we see this great need for one right now. And I really think that this is going to go fast and really be really, really very, very, very exciting.
Well, I appreciate that. The three conventions that I work with, the Basel Convention dealing with transboundary movement of hazardous waste, controlling the e-waste problem, the Rotterdam Convention on Prior Informed Consent, which is the Global Right to Know instrument for chemicals and trade, and the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants. These three conventions are undergoing a transformation right now. They are independent legal instruments, but they're joining their work together. They're synergizing, as we say in the UN. They're exploiting synergies between them to cover the life cycle of chemicals and waste. And this approach is new. It was only asked of the three secretariats a little over a year ago by the UNEP Governing Council, or actually by the parties to the three conventions at a meeting back-to-back with the UNEP Governing Council, which is the United Nations Environment Program forum for bringing together these three legal instruments and the communities that they represent, which is a powerful network. And the reason they're coming together is that we are in the process of reforming the international governance of the environment, and the chemicals and waste issue has surfaced as the trial set. We're the first cluster to be reorganized and to set our sights. Just a moment.
Excuse me, I'm on an interview.
Pardon me for that.
It's fine. That just makes it seem more real. You know, this. We want. I always love it. There was actually a little earthquake in one of our conference calls, and people were talking about this earthquake a little bit. So it makes it so real. I would never. No, this is
there was a knock on the door, and that's very common here.
Well,
I tend to have an open door policy at my office, but for an interview, we try to keep the sound levels down. The three conventions I was saying are the stalking horse for a new way of doing business, and the issue of toxic chemicals and waste is one that lends itself to a new approach. So we hope. We can demonstrate this next year when we come to the Earth Summit 2012, the World Summit on Sustainable Development in Rio, where the topic of international governance of the environment is very high on the agenda.
That's something to look forward to. You had mentioned to me in a past conversation that you were going to be in New York sometime this spring. That's still in the cards, right?
That is the 19th session of the Commission on Sustainable Development. This is the commission set up at the Rio Earth Summit in 1992, which meets every year and looks at progress towards achieving the goals that were laid out in Agenda 21 and in the other agreements that came out of Rio. That 19th meeting is coming up in May, May 2nd through May 13th. And Safe Planet Campaign will be there. The secretariats of the Basel, Rotterdam, and Stockholm conventions, UNEP, FAO, we'll all be in New York. There's not a lot of us, but we'll put our team together and come to New York and help governments as they conclude a two-year process of reviewing international chemicals policy. The chemicals issue has been examined by the global institutions and by the governments that support CSD, that support sustainable development, and they'll draw conclusions. So there are outcomes that will affect the way chemicals are addressed in the global community and nationally, and we hope will make an impact.
Okay. Do you plan any of these Safe Planet outreach events for that window in New York?
We do. We're organizing a United Nations Body Burden Forum, or Safe Planet Forum. This is an event where we will bring experts from the World Health Organization and some of the Safe Planet leaders, Stina Lisa Hadestad-Bratsberg. Stina is a Olympic gold medal skier from Norway. She was twice the overall World Cup ski champion. And now that her athletic career is pinnacled, is peaked, she's turned her life and attention to sustainable development and corporate social responsibility. She's the co-chair of the Safe Planet Campaign, and she'll be chairing our event in New York. At that event, I should mention that we've invited the World Health Organization to share with us new research on the health impacts of toxic chemicals, newly published information that has been put together by researchers from the World Health Organization, give us really for the first time the estimated burden of disease from chemicals, from chemical environmental exposure, and from the management of selected chemicals. I know you're interested in, Don, in dioxin. Dioxin was one of the chemicals that they could not calculate in this study, unfortunately. So there's still more work to be done. But looking at the environmental exposure and management of selected chemicals, WHO has concluded that at least 4.9 million deaths per year can be attributed to that pathway. That's more than 8% of the total deaths for the study year they picked, which was 2004. So this is an enormous challenges that we face from this field.
Certainly, how we come at this, we step back and we look at the fact now that cancer has become the number one killer in the world, you know, top number one global killer, cancer, and that in the U.S. it is soon to overtake heart disease as the number one killer in the U.S. And then we had this fantastic presentation by David O. Carpenter, M.D. He's here in New York State at SUNY Albany, director of the Institute for Health and the Environment. And I'd known this, but I hadn't known it. I hadn't been focused on it, as you become focused when you hear these words from, you know, the great speakers. He focused a group of ours. We were doing a public forum on pollution and cancer in the St. Lawrence River Valley here in upstate New York. And he made it clear from his description of his own research findings that it is not only cancer that is so much a matter of the POPs exposure, but in addition, it is these two other very major chronic diseases, type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. And that is so, you know, when you think about it, the two top killers in the U.S., probably the two top killers in the world, and they're both so much connected, associated, caused by POPs exposure. And no one is saying that it is possible to, like you're saying, produce a, you know, an accounting, you know, a mathematical quantitative accounting of how all the numbers add up. But it is clear that there is risk being imposed that is far more than acceptable. So that's how, you know, we have been going at it in our viewpoint, and why we have decided that it's absolutely essential. I love it the way you guys, at the top, most highest level, I look at the UN and the UNEP as the highest level of government that exists in the world on the environment and chemicals and health. And then I look at the grassroots. And it's so cool the way it turned into this matter where our grassroots group and your top of the government echelon group are working on this identical matter of health effects, body burdens, food supply, chemicals, changing the world in a very fast-paced, revolutionary kind of way. So what we've been doing is trying to convince policymakers. We deal with, you know, federal, you know, U.S. federal and Canadian federal, and then some, you know, international, say the UNEP federal, and even the European Union federal. We deal with them to some extent, but we're finding that it's so difficult when you start dealing with the economic considerations. The economic considerations, the commerce is always given top priority at the higher levels of government. It's given top priority even down to the state and county levels of government. But we found that the town levels of government here in this area that has this St. Lawrence River Valley, St. Lawrence County of upstate New York, where there's this terrible cancer epidemic, we found that the towns, they do not place commerce at top priority when one is endeavoring to bring reductions in cancer incidence. So they've been willing to work with us, produce resolutions that are in approval, calling for, showing their support for, advocating for POPs exposure reduction education. You know, basically tell people the names of the chemicals, where they exist in the environment, and how to reduce exposure to these chemicals. So, you know, we're building this from the bottom up. You guys are building it kind of like from the top down. It's cool, you know, really, it's very cool.
Well, I don't like to think of it as top down because
I know what you mean. You guys have all these connections that are in the grassroots. So I guess you're just building it on a global, very, very broad kind of playing field, and we are building it starting right out. We truly tried to start out higher up, but it was just brutal when you find that our Food and Drug Administration, our U.S. EPA, you're fortunate that you are dealing with nations that are somewhat less the way I'm going to describe as the U.S. is. The U.S. has such a tremendous corporate influence and corporate power and corporate control going, and it's been going for really ever since the U.S. started back in the 1776. And they just, well, they weren't corporations then, but they were powerful people then who were able to create status and position and money and power and these things that build into corporations and then continue this situation where our federal government is not representative. You know, we're not represented. There's this really cool rap song about, do you think we're represented or we're not. We're not represented at all, but we are represented by our town boards. And it's just so sweet to find that in our country, to know that democracy and representation and good people are still alive and strong in the United States. But, you know,
Don, it sounds like you're reading de Tocqueville on democracy in America, the importance of community government in the history of the United States is something that other countries have often looked to as a model. The grassroots and the civil society contribution to building democratic governments is an important one. We in the United Nations are, as the name describes, we are United Nations. And the parties to the conventions that I work for are the governing body, if you will.
Yes.
So it's the top-down is the United Nations organization. The secretary really shouldn't be seen as sitting on top. It's a servant of governments who
exactly.
are on top. Legally speaking, the parties to these instruments, they're the boss. And what's important is the dialogue that we can help create between governments and stakeholders and the public, that our work in the Safe Planet campaign is to help amplify the voice and the communication that flows between those two poles. In fact, to even bring them together. And for that, we've developed some new tools, some new techniques, not so new to some of those who've been out in civil society or been out in even the commercial sector. Things like social networking, using new media, using videos, using art and using community art. Schools right now in Honolulu, Hawaii are in a contest that we organized during the International Marine Debris Conference, which is concluding on Thursday, on Friday in Hawaii this week. We've got dozens of schools who are invited to create alternatives to the single-use plastic bags that are such a problem in the marine environment. And, you know, working with communities through educational systems, through schools, through the informal sector, through NGOs, through business associations, even corporations. We've worked with all the stakeholders to see if we can bring these solutions to the problems of the environment and the chemicals exposure issues that we deal with forward and bring them faster into the policy sector, into the realm where decisions are made. And we like to demonstrate and show what works and not just talk about the problems and belabor the issues. You know, we see that we can do something about these issues. Where governments have taken action and where people have taken up the call to get rid of some of the worst chemical hazards, we've seen those levels drop. We run a global monitoring program on toxic chemicals, and there is evidence of success. And so that message, too, has to get out, because we know it's very discouraging when you just see the levels of disease rising year to year. There's got to be a message of hope in there somewhere, and we think we can deliver it.
The global monitoring program? It's my understanding that there's a global monitoring program that's associated with the Stockholm Convention, so they're monitoring four pots. There's also this breast milk analysis program that the WHO conducts. Are those two programs interconnected?
Yes, they are. And in fact, the New York meeting you were mentioning, the Commission on Sustainable Development, we've invited WHO also to bring forward information from the breast milk monitoring program. And we think there will be new data available by then. We track under the global monitoring plan for the Stockholm Convention the levels of certain chemicals, toxic chemicals, covered by the treaty. The original 12 chemicals that were in the Stockholm Convention. Now, last year, there were amendments to the convention that entered into force, and there are 9 new chemicals that are going to be covered. So currently, 21 persistent organic pollutants are covered. The monitoring plan will start to pick up those. The Safe Planet campaign has already started to look at evidence of those, and we're galvanizing this dialogue between the monitoring community, the chemists, the analytical labs that help us track this, and our spokespersons and celebrities who volunteered to have their own blood tested and are willing to publicize, to speak out about what we've found. Now, we're the United Nations Environment Program. We aren't doctors, and we're not drawing conclusions about health impacts from this small samples of evidence that we're using to open the dialogue. But we are able to measure presence and absence and to share information about levels when the volunteers themselves are willing to come forward. That's what Stina Hadestad-Bratsberg has done. She's had her blood tested. She was with the American actor Ed Begley Jr. in New York with Safe Planet last May at the 18th session of the commission. And they went to UN Medical Services, had their blood tested, and let us film how it felt to donate your blood for this rather scary issue. They were good humored about it. They were charming. And we made a short film called Body Burden, which is available on YouTube and through the Safe Planet Facebook page. We've also been showing that film around the world at conferences and workshops and in community forums, along with another film called Submission in Defense of the Unborn, which is a Swedish film, a documentary by Stefan Jarl, which explores body burden testing in Eva Russa and Stefan Jarl himself, the director. Eva Russa is a Swedish stage and screen actress who was pregnant at the time her body burden was taken, her blood test was taken, and then is learning in the film about the results, which shows that she's passing some of these chemicals on to her child. So it's a rather stark story, but we've used these two films to raise awareness, and we'll continue in New York with other public figures to make the point that people should be aware and they should recognize what the challenge is, but they shouldn't despair. There's things that can be done.
Right. So tell me, what is the Safe Planet campaign doing for Earth Month? I suspect, you know, that you will have some very high-profile, say, the Body Burden flagship event taking place somewhere on the Earth during the Earth Month. Is that the case?
What we have coming up, Earth Month is the fifth meeting of the conference of the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants. We've invited students from Cancun, Mexico, and from Honolulu, Hawaii, to participate in a contest, a set of contests One I mentioned earlier was to design a substitute for the single-use plastic bag. Another is on the climate change and POPs issue, the persistent organic pollutants that are released through climate change processes. That was featured at the Climate Summit last December in Cancun, Mexico, and the winner of that university contest will be brought to Geneva to participate and do outreach events during Earth Month here in among the parties. 700 or 800 delegates are expected to come from more than 140 countries to that event. So we're going to put students on the line and let them speak about what they're concerned about. We're also having a set of events. We're going to show the film produced with BioVision or BioVision, which is a Swiss non-governmental organization, and the Dutch director Jan Vandenberg. They've made the film Silent Snow, and it'll be shown, premiered in Switzerland this coming 27th of April for the community and the delegates. So this is an event where we'll open the doors, both the UN community and also the Geneva and Swiss community will be invited to come see the film. Silent Snow is a film about the Inuit peoples in Greenland and their exposure to persistent organic pollutants, the health impacts, and the ways these toxic chemicals are changing their lives.
Wow,
it's a very serious film.
That's quite an event. So,
yeah.
So you're going to be showing the film Silent Snow. I'd heard that name and seen it on a diagonal list, sir. You're going to be showing the film Silent Snow on April 27th in Geneva, and it's going to be part of the Conference of the Parties on the Stockholm Convention?
Yes, that's right.
Wow, that's quite a moment in time. I've got to put that on my calendar. So let's see. Let's do this. I really liked hearing how you kind of explained it, described it to me when we talked previously about how the various flagships of the Safe Planet campaign kind of came to be. Could you just give us a little background? Give us a little, you know, so people know the work it took, you know, some of the process that was involved in bringing about the Body Burden flagship of the Safe Planet campaign.
Well, body burden's been a term used in the community for at least 10 or 15 years, going back to the Coming Clean campaign in California. Commonweal and other organizations working on toxics issues in California, New York, and other places had come together and started advocating by testing chemicals in our bodies to make that link between health impacts and risks from exposure to hazardous chemicals. That term had never been used in the United Nations, as far as we could tell. I talked to a senior colleague here who was the senior scientist for the Stockholm Convention, now moved on to another post, and she told me how glad she was when she heard the term body burden used at UNEP for the first time. She said, I've always used that term. I've always thought of it as a burden that we carry inside our bodies. But the term is not a scientific one. It's in the science, they talk about biomonitoring. And this sounded fresh to her. We had set out to invite public figures from all across the globe, many sectors of society, from the arts and cultural sector, from human rights and public affairs, science and medicine, and lastly from the world of sports, to volunteer to participate in the campaign as a supporter. Safe Planet is the United Nations campaign for responsibility on hazardous chemicals and waste. And as a supporter, they were invited to make a statement about their concern and about their responsibility. The responsibility to take action. And as part of that invitation, they were asked to think about whether they themselves would wish to undergo this kind of test and would be willing to speak out. It wasn't in any way a requirement to be a supporter of the campaign that you'd take this last step, because it's very serious and it's very personal to have your blood drawn and have your your exposure to these chemicals become public knowledge, not a step anyone would take lightly. So when we invited people to be supporters, people like Ryuichi Sakamoto from Japan, or Miroslav Bobek, a zoologist, a director of Prague Zoo from Czech Republic, Olga Sporanskaya, who's an environmental advocate from the International POPS Elimination Network, Eco Accord in Moscow, Goldman Environmental Prize winner, Yuyun Ismawati, another Goldman Environment Prize winner from Small Island States. She's an Indonesian. People of this caliber, we asked them, and many of them came forward and said they'd be willing to undertake this test. It's not an easy test. It's not an inexpensive test. Quite a lot of advanced chemistry goes into monitoring the chemical substances that we drew up a list of. But nevertheless, we've started modestly, and we are beginning a project that will take this information forward in a series of community forums and a series of global events. So we work at all levels, grassroots, as we did in Houston. Last July, we had a community forum. 120 people came to the Houston Heights Theater, and we showed the films, and then we talked for 2 hours afterwards about what this information means and what we are doing in the UN and what communities are doing in their backyards to deal with these this problem. It's really a dynamic process. Body burden is gone from the community level through the UN, and now is bouncing back at workshops and events across the globe. Just this month, we have two events, one in Gainesville, Florida, the Cinema Verde Environmental Film and Arts Festival being organized by Go Green Nation in Gainesville. That's where the University of Florida is located. I don't know if you know about Gator Nation, but apparently people in that part of the world care a lot about their environment and their health. And so this film festival has shown 25 films over a 10-day period to thousands of people. The other event is a workshop in Suriname in South America. Maybe not the first place you'd think of where toxic chemicals are on the agenda, but Suriname is a party to the Stockholm Convention on POPs. The workshop is to help the government and the people of Suriname to develop a national plan of action on POPs, and they asked if they could show the film submission and body burden to the workshop participants. So it's just give you a scale of the activity that we've done through creating short films and using a long film like submission, the hour and a half long film, really to open up the issue and create a dialogue. It's very interesting how after each of these screenings, the people in the audience, they don't leave. They sit quietly. We offer our expertise. We offer our guests to share their knowledge about the issue, and a dialogue starts. And, you know, the typical UN format is a panel of experts, 1, 2, 3, 4. They each speak for X number of minutes. We don't do that. We start introducing everyone to each other, ask a question, begin to create an interaction between the audience and the visitors that we bring together. And in Houston, to go back to that July 25th evening where we showed the films at the Houston Heights Theater, it was one of those southern Caribbean days when the clouds were darkening and there was a heavy mugginess in the air and you could feel a storm was coming. And just during the films, the lightning struck, and a thunderstorm broke over Houston. The winds were up. We had planned earlier to go out on the bay in the afternoon, but that was canceled because of a storm warning. So it was rough weather, heavy weather. And during our community dialogue after the films, we had started with panel, with people lined up, but pretty soon everyone realized they needed to stand up and stretch. And so we had over 100 people in a circle, standing and talking for over an hour and a half. And at the end, we looked around, we realized that what had been an audience viewing a film had turned into, naturally, a circle of people addressing each other, each standing, looking at everyone in the face. It was extraordinary, natural movement where people felt they needed the strength of each other and formed that circle and spoke to each other in a very respectful way about some very painful issues. That's what can happen when the dialogue of equality and respect forms through this process. And I think that's one of the proudest moments I've had during this year of the Safe Planet campaign, is seeing that spontaneity and respect between people who need each other.
Well, you know, Michael, I find this very interesting. Back in the prior, maybe, I don't know when, the U.S. at one time was working more actively on, you know, considering whether to ratify the Stockholm Convention or not. And we were working on that probably, must have been about 5 years ago, something like that, back in the early to mid-2000s.
Yes.
And it became very clear that the U.S. federal government wasn't interested in becoming a part of the Stockholm Convention. But when you're saying this about the grassroots, the people being so interested in POBS and coming to the body bird and the events that you're conducting, there's a true, you know, considerable divide, great divide, between what our federal government does on POBS and what the grassroots are doing on POBS. And here,
well, I think I can update you on that,
Don.
We understand that there, and we had our executive secretary from the Stockholm Convention, Donald Cooper, on Capitol Hill last year, last autumn. We understand two bills have been introduced in the Senate and in the House of Representatives. I know Henry Waxman is co-author of one of those bills from California. I'm a Californian, so apologies for paying a little bit more attention to my home state. But the other one is Senator Lautenberg's bill in the Senate. And these are bills that would reform the Toxic Substances Control Act, TSCA,
yep.
1976. And we understand that both of those bills in different forms have subchapters that would bring the United States into the Stockholm and Rotterdam conventions as a party. It's currently not a party to these conventions. It
right.
is very active in the issues, and it observes closely the meetings, not just the Conference of the Parties, but even the Chemicals Review Committee meeting that's coming up next week in Rome of the Rotterdam Convention, and the POPSROC, the Persistent Organic Pollutants Review Committee, which meets every year in October here in Geneva of the Stockholm Convention, and these are, you know, the processes by which the global governance, the recommendations for global governance of these chemicals come through. So the United States has been at the table, but it is not a legal party to either of these treaties, nor is it a party to the Basel Convention. I think the federal government isn't the key. It's I think the legislation in Congress and the American executive that's really those are the organs, and the federal government is just the executor of what's decided by the country. We in the UN we are enjoined. That means we're prevented. We are pledged not to make recommendations on what countries should do when they're considering legislation, with the exception of helping them implement agreements at national level that they've committed themselves to internationally. So once the U.S. becomes a party, if it becomes a party to these treaties, we'll certainly be at the table to help them realize their obligations under the treaty, and to help if there's anything else legislatively that we can suggest, but the U.S. has got lots of lawyers and lots of good administrators, and we're pretty confident before they would take a step to become a member of a treaty, they would have figured out what would need to be done to make the treaty happen at the national level.
Really, what you're doing, conducting the body burden events in U.S. cities like Houston and conducting these other types of events that are focused on the responsible use of chemicals and the matters of the health effects of exposure to pollutants. That is such a large part of moving our country toward eventually becoming party to the Stockholm Convention and these other, and these other international chemical treaties. So, you know, you are doing wonderful work here. I did not know whether the UNEP Safe Planet Campaign would be active in the U.S., considering the fact that we're so far from being a part of those treaties. That's really, tell me, how does that work? How can you, you know, what makes it so that it's, you know, kind of comfortable, or that it, is it just that you connect with the grassroots that are in these various places? See what I mean? You know, you're, it must be different conducting a Safe Planet Campaign body burden event in a country, a nation that is party to these conventions, as opposed to conducting these events in nations that are not parties to these conventions.
It's true. If a country is a party, then the first step we take before we organize or accept an invitation to participate in an event, as we did in Houston, is to pick up the phone and talk to our contacts in the national government. So that's the formal process. But for the Safe Planet Campaign, the model or the emerging experience has been one where the leadership's taken by our partners. It's a campaign that everyone's invited to participate in. And taking responsibility might mean that you decide you want to organize something in your community, in New York or in Florida or in Wyoming. And you can come to us with that information that you're willing to do this, you want to do something, you are pledged to the principles of the campaign, promoting reductions in exposure to toxic chemicals, promoting safer alternatives, looking at green chemistry, promoting the science that will replace the stuff that doesn't work for the world and for our health with the next generation of things that will be more in line with what our body chemistries and the Earth's environment can accept, what we need. So these kinds of goals are laid out, and communities can come and say, we want to be part of this campaign. Do we want a safe planet to be part of our own outreach? And what we'll be doing is recording these in the UN's websites. Safe Planet and the three conventions are about to launch a website. We'll try to keep track of this, but honestly, if the campaign's successful, no one will be able to keep track of all the activities. It'll be a little bit like climate change was, or it still is, with thousands and thousands of activities rolling out across the globe. We know, for example, that there are some university students in Indonesia who've organized Safe Planet clubs. We're not sure where they are, what they do. We don't try to control the message. We're just putting information out, and we hope that it'll be taken up and taken to heart by communities, and not only communities, but by businesses, by governments at all levels. This is the prospect. We need so much done if we're going to change our chemical society. We
Yep.
need to move the agenda, and it's not going to happen because a few bureaucrats sitting in a UN office somewhere are pushing buttons. It just doesn't work like that. It's
No.
got to be taken up in society by changes of heart and changes of behavior, and by initiatives that start in communities and work outwards. And we think those initiatives are out there now, and a lot of what we do is we just try to capture the energy and direct the flow, so people who are looking for solutions will know, hey, in this community, in this country, they've already figured out what to do. They know how to do it better. They've got something to offer, and then we want to accelerate the uptake of those solutions through the campaign, through our platforms, through social networks, through web communication, and through traditional communication. One of the first things, this is an aside, but one of the first things we discussed when we thought of how the Safe Planet Campaign would communicate, we realized that the best communication is storytelling. The best communication is what people tell each other face-to-face every day. We looked at some data on how jokes travel. If you've got a good joke, and it's a new joke, and you launch that joke by whispering it into your friend's ear, a good joke will take about 2 years to travel all over the globe. It'll be translated, it'll be embellished, and people will be laughing halfway around the world at your joke. And that's without internet, that's without newspapers, without mass media. That's the power of speech and the power of listening and the power of people-to-people communication.
Cool. Yeah. That is the simplicity and the grassroots and the, you know, the good, free. It doesn't cost any money to talk to somebody standing next to you. It doesn't use up any energy. There's no global climate change, you know, detriment involved there. It is just so nice that people have their voices, they have their minds. They do a great job when they're used. I was at a meeting with a member of our Cancer Action New York group, and we were talking about creating step-by-step greater and greater public education on POPs, exposure reduction. And he said, all we have to do is start talking about it. We encounter all the time, people are hesitant to talk about the POPs. And we are in a particularly, it's a rather unusual place, because being in the St. Lawrence River Valley of the United States of America, we are downstream from the Great Lakes Basin, which many people refer to the St. Lawrence River as this open sewer of the Great Lakes. There's such a body burden of the river, of the POPs, of dioxins, of marics, of toxaphene, of PCBs. We had three big PCB polluters here in St. Lawrence County, the Aluminum Company of America, and the Reynolds Metals, and the General Motors powertrain facility. A lot of POPs from that. And then we're downwind. We are downwind, so downwind. There are so many storms that come out through, and the same storms that place the acid rain in the Adirondack Mountains, which has been such a problem, they place this toxic rain that's not only acid, it's these other chemicals in our terrestrial and aqueous environment here in St. Lawrence County, the St. Lawrence River Valley of New York State in the USA. And on top of that, it is, you know, the main business activity, there are two. It is academia. We have numerous universities, SUNY Potsdam College, State University of New York, SUNY Canton College, State University of New York, Clarkson University Private College and Engineering School, and St. Lawrence University Private Liberal Arts School. That is big business, and then it is dairy farming. And dairy farming is bigger business than that, and dairy farming is the king of the castle, just the top of the hill of the commercial activity going on. And so when we're trying to deal with this bad POPs problem we've got here because of our location, and we're doing it in a place where commerce is so important, being the United States of America, and then it's dairy farming commerce, you can see this great collision. And yet it's been so cool, Michael. It hasn't really been, it's not been a painful collision. It's just been a matter of people, you know, just colliding to a degree and talking and just moving along with this terrible open waste burning issue. It used to be that trash, you could not drive the roads of St. Lawrence County, New York on a summer evening. Didn't matter whether it was a Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Could not drive those roads very far without these fumes of burning plastic filling your car, and you get the windows up and you just try to deal with it somehow, and then you get out of there and then you open the windows and take a deep breath and try to cough that crap out of your lungs. It was horrible. And this trash burning, this plastic being burned to get rid of it, this waste disposal, is going on in backyard burning barrels and in refuse heaps on farms. Commercial entities, like, say, contractors were burning their trash. It was very out of control. And yet we brought that issue up. We connected it with the food supply and the dioxin contaminants of the animal fat, and we got our county going on educating about bringing an end to this practice. And then eventually New York State, you know, got more and more focused on this, and our DEC, our Department of Environmental Conservation, produced a regulation banning this open trash burning statewide. So we built that issue on the trash burning and the dioxins and the animal fat and the dairy industry, and now we're dealing with POPs with the same matters, the health effects, the contamination of the food supply, and the dairy farmers.
Well, Don, open burning is one of the main issues that we're trying to tackle globally.
Okay.
And it surprised a number of our parties where open fires are common and part of the culture.
Yep.
For example, in small island nations, they were very surprised from our monitoring program when we could show them that there were peaks of toxic chemicals associated as byproducts of combustion covered by the POPs convention. They were very surprised because they didn't associate those activities with this type of pollution.
Yep.
A lot of people think the pollution is an industrial problem and not a problem of people who have other lifestyles and other means of livelihood. But it's a lot depends on how you treat your landscape and how you treat your trash, how you treat your materials. So we are right now, for example, working on the informal recycling of electronic and electrical equipment. Quite a lot of that is done over open fires by families, even children are documented to be working in this sector. And this is both dangerous for their health, for their family's health, dangerous loadings of toxic byproducts of toxic chemicals that come out during that informal recycling process into the environment surrounding those communities, and ultimately adds to the global burden because persistent organic pollutants are those chemicals that travel far. They're
yes.
Travelers without passports, we say. And they are bioaccumulating and moving across the globe. So we have to work at all levels. It's not enough just to say you can't engage in economic activities. UNEP's agenda is to transform the existing economy, which we believe is not sustainable, into
right.
a sustainable economy, a green economy. That's the second main theme of the Earth Summit in Rio next year. To look at new models for economic activities that will take out these practices which are not sustainable for the recycling sector, for the waste management sector, enormously important to get the right techniques in and to retrain people and create jobs for them and opportunities that will not threaten their health.
Well, on this note of the vision, you have the vision there for transforming the world economy into something which is sustainable. On that note, let's wrap this up. It's been really good talking with you, Michael. You may well be the person that is living the most exciting life on Earth right now. And I hope you have a lot of like passion for excitement. I know it's going to get more and more exciting. So it'll be very interesting. So thanks so much for giving me this interview and giving the listeners, you know, your bright mind and your very, very eloquent speaking behaviors. And you know, you're good at sharing yourself in these complex matters. Thanks.
You're
so
very
much.
Generous, Don. But thank you and thank your listeners. And we look forward to talking with them again.
Very good.
Take care.
Happy afternoon.
And happy spring to you.
You too. Yeah, it is springtime now, even though there's still some snow on the ground here in the Adirondack Mountains of New York State. I'm sure
the crocuses are popping up all over the Jura where I live. Spring is really arriving.
That's beautiful. Okay, we'll see him sooner or later. Thank you
Take
so much,
care,
Michael.
You're yeah. welcome. Bye-bye.
This is Don Hassig with Cancer Action Networks, Loving the Earth, Environmental Revolution. I have been speaking with Michael Stanley Jones of the Safe Planet Campaign. It's all about creating a new economy that will be sustainable. It's all about responsible use of chemicals. It's building the responsibility by building the awareness of the adverse health effects that are involved with exposure and body burden of chemicals such as dioxins and PCBs and the brominated flame retardants. We are making progress here. The world is coming to better recognize the need for action. There is change taking place. It will take place at a faster and faster pace, and that is environmental revolution. Good day.